Bob Edwards Weekend is a production of Sirius XM Radio. For more information about our program, go to bobedwardsradio.com. This is Bob Edwards Weekend. As the busiest shopping time of the year begins, the investigative journalism website GlobalPost.com is taking a closer look at conditions in some of the factories that make the hot electronic gadgets that will become presents this holiday season. Thomas Mucha edited the series, Silicon Sweatshops, and he joins us now from Boston.
It's a pleasure to be here, Bob.
What kinds of gadgets are we talking about?
We're talking about your cherished iPhone, your Nokia cell phone, a Dell keyboard, the sort of things that we've all grown to love and depend upon. And what we've learned, Bob, was that these items are likely made and assembled by workers who have few rights and who often toil under sweatshop-like conditions, labor activists say.
So by the time one's new iPhone shows up under the tree, whose hands has it passed through?
Quite a few hands, and here's why. Let's think about all the parts that go into every iPhone or similar product. We're talking flash memory chips. We're talking camera parts, touchscreen glass, GPS receivers, antenna switches, headphone amplifiers, plus all the plastics and rubber and all the other silicon bits that go into that. Now, before these final products hit U.S. stores, all these many parts need to be manufactured and assembled by thousands of workers across hundreds of companies, across many countries, in all different legal jurisdictions. So it's a very complex management challenge, to say the least.
Jonathan Adams, one of the reporters who worked on the series, writes about the migrant workers in Taiwan's high-tech parks. And one of those workers, a Filipino woman, told him about the deal she made with the devil to get a job there.
That's right. And one of the key things that we're looking at here, Bob, is the roles of these migrant workers from the Philippines. A lot of them are having to pay placement fees that are far in excess of Taiwan regulations and far in excess of sort of the codes of conducts that these companies themselves have put into place to police these actions. So what happens is these people in the Philippines and many other Southeast Asian nations, they go to labor brokers who take money and place them into these jobs.
Take their passports, too.
They take their passports, they take their money. It is, as you say, a deal with the devil in many cases.
This woman made $300 in her take-home salary for the year. So what are the living conditions like for these workers?
Well, it varies from company to company, but a lot of the places, Bob, are institutionalized, very soulless factories, soulless dormitories where people are stacked up against each other. So it's very, I don't want to say prison-like, but you sort of get the sense that these conditions are not exactly ideal.
And if the workers speak up about this and complain?
The workers do not have a lot of rights in this regard. And it goes back to sort of the incentives that all of the companies are under to sort of create this complex situation. So think about it. You have all of these brands who are trying to sell us all products at a reasonable rate. In order to do that, they have to get their costs in line. And that means all of these suppliers have to lower their costs. And a lot of times that means falling down onto the workers themselves.
In 2006, Apple did its own audit of the factories that produced its iPods after media reports highlighted some of the abuses, like workers putting in excessive overtime. Did those findings change the company's behavior?
Well, these companies are embarrassed, and they have all promised improvements in recent years. They've all drafted codes of conduct for their Asian suppliers, and these are specific rules that they ask their suppliers to live by. And all these companies happily post these codes of conduct to their website. They've also promised more factory audits, snap visits to supplier factories across Asia in order to catch these abuses. But here's the problem, these activists say. While these codes may be great PR, they're not working to fix the situation. Abuses continue and in some cases were made worse even by the global economic crisis when strapped suppliers either laid people off en masse without notice or alternately worked them to the bone when orders did come in.
Apple updated its study, published in February 2009. Apple found nearly 60% of audited suppliers violated its code of conduct guidelines on work days and days off. Who enforces these codes? Or does anyone enforce them?
Well, it's the companies themselves who put these codes into place. And it's the companies themselves that ask the suppliers to live up to these codes. But the problem is compounded by a lack of transparency that you get along the whole Asian supply chains. They're notoriously murky. I mean, contractors can shift orders across borders and between factories and over to this subcontractor or that subcontractor. Meanwhile, many major brands treat these supplier lists as top secret information. So that makes it difficult to pin down who's making what for whom, and therefore difficult to know who to hold accountable when these allegations of abuse come to light.
So how does Apple respond to those who say it's hiding behind codes that are ineffective in securing workers' basic rights?
Well, Apple insists that it is doing a lot. And they say that their audits are done across all our suppliers. They call it a very rigorous process. They say they take corrective actions as and when required. They say that they audit aggressively. They post all of their results on their website. And meanwhile, they say this document, these codes of conducts, are what they call dynamic. So they continually update them.
What kind of labor rights violations are we talking about in addition to excessive overtime?
Sure. Well, in our investigation, Silicon Sweatshops, we looked sort of at three big areas. We looked at Taiwanese workers, and there we found routine violations of Apple and also industry codes of conduct on work hours, days off, overtime, as we said, worker complaint mechanisms, that's the ability to go to a boss with a problem, and the right to organize. In China, we found all of those same things, but we also found there some allegations of underage labor. And then for the Filipina migrant workers, we're finding these placement fees that are far in excess of both Apple and sometimes legal restrictions.
As you said, this is compounded by the lack of transparency. How did the reporters, your reporters who worked on this series, get the story?
Kathleen McLaughlin and Jonathan Adams are two of our most experienced correspondents. And so they set out to pull apart and sort of decode this whole Asian supply chain. So they spoke with dozens of high-tech workers in the industrial parks of Taiwan. They spoke with migrant workers who work in the booming factories of southern China. They also met with these migrant workers who come from the Philippines and other countries. And these are the people who have left their families for the chance to make $500 or so a month in these high-tech factories. But they also then interviewed the labor rights activists, industry analysts across Asia, Europe, the U.S., and of course, they also spoke with the companies involved, some of the biggest brand names in high tech, Apple, Dell, Nokia, Microsoft, as well as several of the Asian suppliers who manufacture and assemble parts for these companies. So it's a big, sprawling, complex situation, and you just have to go at it from various angles.
The series highlights one factory program that you say could be the blueprint for solving this perennial problem. Tell me about that.
Yeah, the news wasn't all bleak. And one of the things I want to also emphasize is that this is a very complex issue. We did find lots of genuine frustration on the parts of these companies to work on this problem. But as we said, it's a very complex and sprawling situation. But one of the potential rays of hope that we found in the reporting was from Hewlett-Packard. And this seems to be working. And what Hewlett-Packard is doing is partnering with labor rights groups and NGOs to help improve conditions. So there's a parts factory in Dongguan in southern China where workers are paid for annual leave. They're paid for other conditions, all according to the law, they say. They also have access to karaoke, basketball courts. They get free annual medical checks. But most importantly, Bob, it's these workers say they know their rights and the management listens to them.
And has the factory been less profitable as a result of these relatively humane conditions?
Well, it's relatively early days, but HP and the supplier says it's working. They say their workers are more efficient because they feel their voices are heard and respected. Management wins points and even new business with Western customers by these practices, and they have fewer conflicts with employees. So as a result, the company says it's doing well financially despite last year's downturn. So we'll see.
Why can't the same thing happen at these other factories?
Well, it might happen. In fact, Dell, part of our reporting, Dell said that they too were looking at this same problem. And in order for this to happen, it's going to require lots of coordination, lots of cooperation, lots of additional work. And this is layered upon an already highly complex situation that goes across many countries and many legal jurisdictions. So, you know, it's extra work.
What about the responsibility of governments in seeing to its workers' welfare?
Well, that's another thing that we looked into in the investigation. You have different legal situations. You have different jurisdictions. And so the companies generally leave it to the suppliers to comply with these laws in their certain countries. And so, again, it's another complex thing that everyone has to keep an eye on.
I mean, there's a big difference between government's function in Taiwan versus government's function in China.
There is, and it's ever-changing. And all of these countries, though, understand the importance of foreign direct investment like this. They understand the importance of these jobs to their economies. And so there is incentive on everyone's part to fix this. It's just a difficult thing to do.
So what should American consumers take from this report? What can the individual gift buyer do?
I mean, the point of this was, of this investigation, was to sort of shine a light on these practices that most Americans don't know about. Our job as journalists is to try to tell the stories that are out there and to help give consumers more information about the purchases that they're making. So you should know that if you're going to buy an iPhone, if you're going to buy an iPod, if you're going to buy all of these gadgets, that there are people at the other end of these things, and sometimes people who are being exploited and treated unfairly. Now, the companies are working on it, but that was the point of the investigation, was to show the human face that goes into all of these products that we're all lapping up every year.